sound familiar. Then again, nothing else seemed familiar either. He knew who he was, but he couldn't remember much of his past, any of the people he knew, or what he might be doing here today. Was he alone in the world? As he pondered, he could almost bring up memories of some people. He felt sure he had a family, but faces and names refused to come into focus.
"Remarkable," Lomo said. "I feel certain I have a life, but I'm at a loss for specifics."
"I get your meaning," Pietro said. "Same for me. What about you, Seth Sorensen?"
"Same," Seth said. "My whole life feels on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember details."
"I'd be tempted to scoff, except I feel the same way," Lomo said.
A newcomer emerged from the black rectangle in the wall, a stocky man, well-dressed, and with a silver glove on one hand. He looked perplexed.
"Quick," Lomo said. "Why are you here?"
The man looked from Lomo to Seth to Pietro.
"What happened to me?"
"You remember yourself," Seth prompted.
"I'm Tregain," the man said. "Otherwise, I'm at a loss."
Seth, Lomo, and Pietro made their introductions and explained they were apparently about to compete for a trophy. The faces on the doors remained silent. Seth tried to gauge the unremembered men. Was it possible he knew all of them? None of them? They seemed pleasant enough, but if they were all trying to win the same trophy, they were his competition. Maybe even enemies? Or was it a friendly contest? How could his memory be gone? Another man burst through the black rectangle, then doubled over, hands on his knees, panting. He had a beard and long hair and wore some armor, but he carried no weapon. It seemed like he had been running.
"What's your name?" Seth asked.
The man straightened and looked around.
"Obregon," he said in a strong voice. "Why are you here?" Lomo asked.
Obregon folded his arms and brooded before answering.
"I have no idea."
Once again, introductions were made. Seth kept an eye on the black rectangle, wondering who might come through next. He tried to guess at the stories of the people already in the room. Seth wore a sword, and Lomo was the only other person with a visible weapon, a sword as well. Lomo was so well-groomed that he looked less like a real adventurer and more like a guy who played an adventurer in a show. Pietro could have been an old marooned guy from a desert island. Obregon seemed like a warrior with a face that had probably absorbed a punch or two. Tregain came across as a lord. Seth could not guess how he had ended up competing against these men for a trophy. He seemed out of place with a bunch of adults. He didn't think he was related to any of them, but it was hard to be sure with his memories so unfocused.
"The competition will now begin," the face on the left door uttered. "The first through the gauntlet to the trophy is the victor,"
the face on the right door pronounced.
"Enter the gauntlet at your own risk," the face on the left door warned. "Select any weapon of your choosing,"
the face on the right door encouraged.
"Only one can take home the prize,"
the face on the left door intoned.
"When the doors open, all may proceed,"
the face on the right said. The bronze doors swung outward. Chapter 31. Identity. Seth went through the bronze doors behind Tregain and Obregon. A foyer awaited beyond, the walls lined with weapons and shields. Then a wide hallway proceeded onward, ramping steadily upward. Tregain grabbed a shield and a sword, as did Obregon. Lomo drew his sword, and Seth did as well. Pietro selected a knife. From the back of the hall marched a group of clay figures armed with spears, axes, clubs, and swords. A few carried shields. There must have been 20 in all.
"For glory!"
Tregane called, sword held high as he charged up the incline. Obregon followed him closely, then Lomo next. Seth brought up the rear beside Pietro. Seth wanted to be first into the gauntlet, but hoped hanging back while the others fought might provide an opportunity to slip ahead. Either Tregane, Obregon, and Lomo fought well, or the clay figures fought poorly. The clay warriors proved brittle, shattering when contact was made. Obregon soon discovered that bashing them with his shield was perhaps more effective than hitting them with a sword, and Tregane copied the technique. Two of the clay warriors slipped by Tregane, Obregon, and Lomo. One focused on Seth while the other came for Pietro. Seth ducked a clumsy swing from a scimitar and, while down low, slashed his sword through two clay legs, shattering them into bits and fragments. The torso burst apart when it hit the floor. Glancing over, Seth found that Pietro had demolished his clay warrior as well. The three men in the lead finished off the clay warriors and advanced to where the hallway leveled out. Most of the clay figures had broken apart so completely they might have been smashed pottery. Seth and Pietro followed the others, but Seth worried that he was lagging behind too much. Holes riddled the floor, ceiling, and walls of the hallway in this level section. Spikes thrust out from and retracted into the holes at random, threatening to stab anyone attempting to pass. Seth quickly realized the trick was to never line up your body with holes, which was a challenge, with opposing walls to consider, as well as the ceiling and floor. There were some resting areas without as many holes, and also some areas so perforated that anyone hoping to pass had to trust a little bit to luck. Seth paused where the holes began, watching the other men dodging, ducking, and jumping. A spike from the wall grazed Obregon's shoulder. One from the floor tore Tregane's pants. Pietro sprang nimbly forward, moving with more grace and control than the younger men, dancing from one foot to the other, twisting, hopping, and sliding. Seth did not relish being in last place, so he rushed forward as well. He soon discovered there was a quick hiss of air right before a spike emerged, and he tried to use that as insurance against getting skewered. Seth followed the route Pietro was taking, a student imitating the master. He checked the holes himself as well, but he consistently found the old man's path to be about as good as the patterns of holes allowed. Though Seth had a few close calls, he made it to the far side of the many holes, untouched. The hall elbowed, and Seth found Tregane, Obregon, and Lomo once again battling clay soldiers, even more than before. With a rumble, the walls of the corridor began closing together. Seth and Pietro charged forward. Seth dodged the downswing of an axe and pulverized the attacker with a blow to the chest. Obregon, Tregane, and Lomo fought their way past where the walls were closing, leaving six clay soldiers behind. By retreating strategically, Seth tried to isolate them and take them one at a time. The clay fighters seemed to reach back before every swing, giving him time to anticipate and either counter or dodge. With weapons whistling nearby, Seth dispatched one after another, smashing four of the six. Pietro dodged and slashed, taking care of the other two, but receiving a lance through his thigh. The hallway was now less than half the width than it had been when Seth had started, and it kept getting narrower every moment. Seth still had a good way to go before passing the closing walls, and a quick glance back showed him that Pietro was on the floor. The old man tugged the weapon out of his thigh and tried to stand, but his leg buckled and he collapsed. Pietro tried to rise again and fell again, slipping in his own blood. Seth paused, the walls grinding ever closer together. A big squish was coming for anything caught between them. Tregane and Lomo looked back from beyond the moving walls. Obregon was already running ahead. After a moment, both men turned and chased Obregon. Seth ran to Pietro.
Go, Pietro said. It's too late for me. There is serious damage to the muscles and tendons.
Seth regarded the walls. They would collide shortly. He couldn't let the old man get mashed.
I'll drag you.
We won't make it, Pietro said.
He was right. Seth was sure he could still sprint past the moving walls, but not while dragging somebody. But he might be able to get Pietro clear if he went back toward the start, which was closer. Speed would be everything. Seth doubted he could carry the older man fast enough, so he hooked him under his arms and started pulling, dragging the injured man behind him, the lean, shirtless body inadvertently sweeping up clay fragments. With the hallway tightening, Seth saw he had a chance, but knew it would be close. The only sure thing would be leaving Pietro behind, but Seth refused to let that be an option. Legs churning, muscles burning, Seth watched the walls close in until he could have reached out and touched them in either direction. With a final burst of effort, Seth made it past the narrowing hall, and a few steps later had dragged Pietro clear. The walls ground together with the crunch of clay fragments, and then became still. Since the moving walls stretched from the floor to the ceiling, there was now no way to proceed.
Thank you,
Pietro said, panting.
You're welcome, Seth replied, gasping for air.
You won't win the trophy,
Pietro said.
I couldn't leave you, Seth said.
Why not?
Pietro asked.
There was a chance I could save you.
Pietro reached into the pocket of his pants and produced a jade key.
And I saved this for you. There is indeed a trophy at the end of the gauntlet, but it doesn't matter. The key of forgetting is the reason you all came here. Go. I'll be all right.
Are you sure?
Pietro stood, smirked, took a spinning jump into the air, and landed as a dwarf. He winked, clapped his hands, and vanished. Seth was baffled by what he had just seen. The old man was clearly magical, some kind of shapeshifter. Holding the key tightly, Seth turned back toward the start of the gauntlet. He found that no spikes issued from the holes anymore, but he kept a wary eye on them until he had crossed that area. He ran down the incline and out through the bronze doors, then charged into the black rectangle in the wall. Kendra withdrew down a hall beside Lachlan, about a dozen golden figures coming their way at the speed an ordinary person would walk. The movements of the statues were not fast, but they were no longer terribly slow either. Kendra knew there was no way to dodge forward through so many. She held the banishment rod, having taken it from the atrium. She and Lachlan had retreated farther away as the golden statues began to show up. Unfortunately, removing the rod from the socket had not hidden the black door.
This way,
Lachlan said, guiding her around a corner. Kendra suspected that without his knowledge of the castle's twists and turns, the golden figures would have already apprehended her. They rounded another corner to find 8 golden statues coming down the hall.
They're getting faster, Kendra said.
From now until sunrise it only gets worse, Lachlan said. Change of plans. Follow me.
She stayed right behind him, but before long another group of golden statues cut them off. They doubled back to find yet another group closing in.
We're in trouble, Lachlan said. I didn't want to get too far from the atrium. I wanted to work around them and keep a way back open. And now we might be sunk.
What do you mean? Kendra asked.
They're making a coordinated effort to cut off all escape routes, Lachlan said. Earlier we might have tried splitting up. That will no longer help much. One last chance.
He went through a door into an empty room. It connected to another vacant room, and another. They came out into a hall with a dead end in one direction, and a bunch of golden statues coming from the other way. Doubling back, they found golden statues striding through the rooms they had just crossed.
"What do we do?"
Kendra asked, trying not to let panic take over.
"Create what space we can,"
Lachlan said. He led Kendra back out into the hall, and they ran to the dead end. At least 20 golden statues advanced toward them.
"They can't change you while you wear the glove," Lachlan said. "But they can grab you. Turn me to platinum."
"No," Kendra said.
"Hurry, or they'll turn me to gold and I'll be working against you," Lachlan said. "Turn me to platinum. Tell me to protect you, then follow me. Once I make an opening, move as fast as you can. Don't let them take hold of you. There is still a chance you can slip through without getting apprehended."
With the nearest of the golden statues less than 10 paces away, Kendra took Lachlan by the hand with her gloved hand. Platinum spread quickly down his arm and across him until he was entirely transformed.
"Protect me,"
she said, feeling terrible for changing him and worried that it would all be for nothing. The platinum statue of Lachlan walked toward the golden statues, moving no quicker than they did. He locked hands with the first statue he met, twisting her aside, and jostled into some others. Kendra dashed into the narrow gap he made. The golden figures crowded together, hemming her in. The banishment rod was wrested from her grip, and then metallic hands closed around her wrists and ankles, holding her firmly. Key of forgetting in hand, Seth stepped into the atrium to find Celebrant waiting with at least 40 golden statues. Down one hallway, golden statues were fending off silver ones. A couple of the golden figures held Kendra between them. She still wore the platinum glove. Celebrant held the banishment rod. Seth's memories returned in a flood. He recalled not just what had happened inside the gauntlet, but all his old memories as well. He tried to subtly slip the key into a pocket. Humbuggle appeared just a few feet in front of him.
"Well done, lad," the dwarf said. "I'm surprised you have come so far so fast. One last rhyme before the end."
"Do not interfere with my advantage, dwarf,"
Celebrant said. Humbuggle raised both hands.
"I don't play favorites. I'm here with information. You should want it as much as they do."
"Go on,"
Celebrant said. Humbuggle cleared his throat and straightened his vest, then recited,
"The power of the Wizenstone was never meant for man to own. A single door impedes your way, where golden crest shines in the day. The prize beyond compare is near. You still have reason left to fear. If you should choose to turn the key, the price is your identity."
"My identity?" Seth asked.
"Key of forgetting," Humbuggle said. "Steep price for a big prize. Good luck!"
The dwarf clapped his hands and vanished.
"You have the key,"
Celebrant said, glowering at Seth.
"Maybe not," Seth replied.
"I saw you put it in your pocket,"
Celebrant said.
"Maybe that was a candy bar," Seth tried.
"It was a key made of jade,"
Celebrant said.
"And Humbuggle congratulated you."
Seth removed it from his pocket. Celebrant smiled.
"Well done. This has been quite a game."
"If you say so," Seth said.
"What if I gave you and your sister a sporting chance?"
Celebrant said.
"I'd be incredibly suspicious," Seth said.
"Taking the glove from Kendra and turning her to gold would be no problem,"
Celebrant said.
"Same with changing you to gold. But that would end our game, and Dragon's Love a good hunt. I haven't had such sport in ages. And wouldn't you prefer a small chance over none?
I'm listening, Seth said.
Do you know where the golden crest shines in the day?
Celebrant asked. Seth glanced at Kendra. She shrugged.
Not really, Seth said.
The second highest tower of this castle has a golden crest on the outside,
Celebrant said.
The tallest tower does not. There are only two locked doors in this entire castle. Have you noticed the doors are all unlocked, even in the dungeon?
Now that you mention it, yes, Seth said.
The room atop the tallest tower is locked and holds the king and queen,
Celebrant said.
The second highest tower is also locked, and there is a golden crest on the outside of the tower, and the room has no windows.
Sounds like a candidate, Seth said.
You get there by taking that hall,
Celebrant said, pointing.
Turn left at the first intersection. After the turn, the hall leads into a room with a big chandelier. At the rear of the room are two staircases. Take the right one. Go down the hall and up the stairs at the end.
This seems like a lot of help, Seth said.
I am giving you a head start,
Celebrant said.
Use it how you prefer.
He turned toward Kendra.
Release the girl.
The golden statues holding Kendra let go of her.
Clear the way,
Celebrant said, and the golden statues opened a path to the hall he had first indicated. He repeated his instructions.
Can we have the rod?
Kendra asked. Celebrant grinned.
I can't make this too easy. Go, if you choose. I won't be far behind.
Seth glanced at Kendra. She gave a nod. They started running.
You know this is a trick, Seth said. He just wants us to open the door.
And it's the one chance we have, Kendra said. Better than getting turned to gold.
I agree, Seth said. Celebrant had us. Now we have some room to move. Where is Lachland?
We got cornered, so I turned him to platinum, Kendra said. It was to keep him from getting changed to gold.
They reached an intersection. To the right, Seth saw golden statues approaching at a quick walk. He and Kendra turned left.
Obregon and Tregane joined Lomo and me in the gauntlet, Seth said. If they all live, they'll come out before long.
Nobody else? Kendra asked.
The dwarf was there in disguise, Seth said.
He noticed more golden statues coming their way down a side hall.
We still don't know who made the gong ring, Kendra said. The late arrival.
Stay ready for anything, Seth said.
They arrived at the room with the large chandelier.
Do we go to the tower? Kendra asked.
Seth slowed, walking toward the stairs at the back of the room.
What if we run off and hide? Could that work?
I don't think so, Kendra said, wishing she could say otherwise.
We can't leave the castle, and wherever we hide, they will eventually find us.
Seth nodded.
Plus, I think the statues are corralling us, or maybe just still after us. They won't slow until sunrise.
But to risk your identity? Kendra asked. To forget yourself?
It's obvious Celebrant wants somebody else to unlock the door, Seth said. Enough that he's letting us do it unsupervised.
They reached the right-hand stairs at the rear of the room.
Do you think turning the key has to be voluntary? Kendra asked.
Looks like Celebrant thinks so, Seth said.
The poem talks about choosing.
Do we keep going? Kendra asked.
Golden statues entered the far side of the room. Seth started up the stairs.
If we're too slow, Celebrant may catch up, Seth said. Getting to the door first is better than getting caught again.
Lomo will get mobbed when he comes out of the black door, Kendra said. We're out of allies.
This door is the last obstacle, Seth said. We can do this. I'm going to open it. Once I do, I'll probably forget a lot. When I went for the key, I lost so many memories, but I kept a sense of who I was. Losing my identity sounds more extreme. Hopefully, when you get the Wizen Stone and end the game, my memories will return like they did when I left the gauntlet.
They rushed down a hall to a winding stairway. No golden statues were currently in view.
I don't have the banishment rod, Kendra said. If the Wizen Stone is so powerful, you can use that to fight off the demon, Seth said. I don't know how the Wizen Stone works, Kendra said. The poem warned it's not for people to own. We can't let Celebrant get it, Seth said. We have to flip this on them somehow. We could try to ditch the key, Kendra said.
They were passing doors as they climbed the stairs.
They have our escape routes cut off, Seth said. If we chuck the key out a window, they'll find it before long. We're cornered. We have nowhere to hide. It seems clear that Celebrant wants us to open the door, Kendra said. Isn't that the last thing we should do? It's going to happen either way, Seth said, panting with the exertion of running up the stairs. If we wait, he'll have somebody else do it. If we unlock the door quickly, maybe you'll have a chance to do something before Celebrant arrives. Lock him out, destroy the stone, use it. I'm not sure anything will work, Kendra said. I think we blew it. I think we lost. At least I won't remember, Seth said. That isn't funny, Kendra said. Hopefully you can undo the forgetting somehow, Seth said. If not, I'll still be me. I just won't know it. I'll get back to myself eventually. I'll relearn. I can't think of anything worse to lose than knowing who I am, Kendra said. I don't want to, Seth said, feeling tears sting his eyes and clenching his fists, determined not to cry. We're trying to save the world. Small price if it helps.
They reached the top of the stairs and found themselves facing an ornate door made of silver-gray metal and set with gems.
There it is, Kendra said. Are you sure about this?
They approached the door together. Seth held up the key.
It wasn't too bad in that room when I lost memories, he said, trying to console her. You don't really know what you're missing. That's sort of the most tragic part, Kendra said. This is brave of you, Seth. Maybe too brave.
He shrugged.
I need to leave you time to try to do something.
He pushed the key into the keyhole.
Sorry to check out. Good luck. Tell everybody I love them. Even Nox. Especially you.
Seth turned the jade key and swooned, staggering a little. He stared at the door, perplexed. He did not know where he was. He held up his hands, but they were unfamiliar. He seemed to be a kid, a young teen. He did not know his own name. How did he know nothing about himself or where he was? Wasn't he somebody? What could possibly have happened?
Seth, are you all right?
He turned to face the girl who had spoken. She looked at him with concern, but nothing about her was familiar. Could his name be Seth? Did this young woman know him? She looked a little older than him. Who was she? And who was the man approaching behind her?
Chapter 32, Wizen Stone. Kendra held her breath as Seth turned the key of forgetting. He stood still for a moment, staring at the ornate door.
Seth, are you all right?
She asked. He turned and looked at her without recognition. Her heart sank. She could only assume that his mind had been wiped. Her brother no longer knew her, or himself. Then he looked over her shoulder with interest. Before Kendra could turn, strong arms wrapped around her from behind, pinning her arms to her sides.
"Don't struggle," a voice spoke in her ear. "We have little time."
She knew that voice. "Ronadin?" Kendra asked.
"Celebrant is coming," Ronadin said. "We need to get into that room."
"What's going on?" Seth asked.
"This girl has a dangerous glove," Ronadin said. "It turns people to platinum. I can't risk her using it on us."
Kendra tried to twist her wrist to touch Ronadin, but he squeezed her too tightly, keeping a firm hand on her forearm just behind the glove.
"Seth, attack him!" she cried.
"She's trying to fool you," Ronadin said. "I'm your brother. Don't fall for her tricks."
"It's not a trick," Kendra said. "I'm your sister."
"She's a liar," Ronadin said. "Look who is attacking who. I didn't draw a weapon. I'm not trying to kill her. I just don't want her using the glove on us."
"Does the glove turn people to platinum?" Seth asked.
"Yes," Kendra said. "I'm using it to protect us. This is Ronadin, the Dark Unicorn."
Seth scrunched his brow. "He doesn't look like a unicorn."
"Kendra," Ronadin said, "we have no time.
They will be here in a moment. Take off the glove. You can keep it. Put it back on when Celebrant arrives. I just need insurance you won't use it on us."
"What is this?" Seth asked. "What happened to me? What's going on?"
Kendra could hear footsteps climbing the stairs. Ronadin let her use her ungloved hand to remove the glove.
"Turning the key to that door erased your memory," Ronadin said. "For now, just watch."
Ronadin released Kendra but stayed near. She considered putting the glove back on and trying to touch him, but the Dark Unicorn was right. She had no time. If he went for the Wizen Stone, she would put the glove on and tag him. Kendra grabbed the knob and pushed the door open. They entered a windowless room with glowing globes of light and a pedestal at the center. Atop the pedestal sat a cut gemstone the size of a baseball. Geometrically complex, the crystalline jewel contained faint, scintillating hints of all colors in existence.
"The Wizen Stone,"
Kendra said. Ronadin closed the door and briefly examined the knob.
"Can't lock it from the inside," he said.
Seth stood off to one side.
"That looks expensive," he said.
"It's magical," Kendra replied.
"What do I do?"
"Be smart," Ronadin said. "You don't have the rod, and Celebrant let you come here."
"We can't let him get it," Kendra said.
"No," Ronadin said. "We can't."
"Whose side are you on?" Kendra asked.
Ronadin laughed as if she were ridiculous.
"Mine," he glanced at Seth. "And my brother's."
"You're not his brother," Kendra corrected. "I'm his sister."
"Who is Celebrant?" Seth asked.
"Bad guy," Kendra said. "King of the dragons."
"What she said," Ronadin agreed.
"Kendra, Humbuggle is the greatest trickster the world has seen. He has guarded the Wizen Stone for ages, long before coming here. Claiming the Wizen Stone is bound to be more complicated than this appears."
"So I should do nothing?" Kendra asked.
Ronadin gave her a measuring stare.
"With Celebrant coming, if I thought I could just take the Wizen Stone, what do you suppose I would be doing right now?"
Kendra frowned. "It might not be the real stone, or it might be trapped."
"You're starting to think like a survivor," Ronadin said.
"But Celebrant is coming with the banishment rod," Kendra said.
"Isn't it exciting?" Ronadin asked. "Such high stakes, and all we can really do is improvise. We may not make it. We're too close to the action on this one, but we can't let him have the Wizen Stone."
"I can't let you have it either," Kendra said.
"The feeling is mutual," Ronadin replied with a grin.
The door opened. Celebrant entered, the banishment rod in his hand. Obregon followed.
Behind them, Kendra caught a glimpse of gold and silver statues fighting before Obregon closed the door.
"Nobody has endeavored to claim the jewel?"
Celebrant asked. Kendra tugged on her glove.
"I will if you loan me the banishment rod."
"Such a generous offer," Celebrant said. "Thank you for granting us access and then stepping aside. I'll make your endings swift."
His eyes shifted to Ronadin.
"What are you doing here?"
"Wouldn't have missed it," Ronadin said.
"You were listening when we spoke outside the black door," Celebrant said.
"I'm a good listener," Ronadin said. "You got here just ahead of us," Kendra realized.
"I hid in the room below as you went by," Ronadin said. "What matters is we are here." Celebrant narrowed his eyes at Ronadin.
"Do you mean to stop me?"
"I just like to be in the know," Ronadin said.
"I don't trust you,"
Celebrant said.
"If you did, you would be the first in a long time," Ronadin said.
Celebrant held out the banishment rod to Obregon.
"Swear to me once more,"
he said.
"My king,"
Obregon replied, dropping to one knee.
"You have always had my complete loyalty. May you reign forever. If you grant me the honor of retrieving the stone, I will stand in your place, claiming it in your name. I swear on my honor as a dragon, and on my ancestors, and on my descendants. The stone is yours if I retrieve it."
"Take the rod,"
Celebrant said. Obregon rose and accepted the banishment rod.
"Quickly now,"
Celebrant said.
With the rod in one hand, Obregon strode to the pedestal, paused to examine the surrounding area for a moment, and then reached out to pick up the wizened stone with his free hand. As soon as his fingers touched the surface of the jewel, he froze. For a moment, his body began to jerk and then to vibrate intensely. With a flash of light, he changed to ash, clothes, breastplate, and all. The banishment rod clattered to the floor as the particles of ash spread out, percolating downward.
"Whoa," Seth said. "That guy turned into confetti."
Kendra swallowed dryly, relieved she had not tried to grab the jewel. She glanced at Ronadin, who watched Celebrant. The Dragon King glared at the wizened stone, his body tense but still, fury held in restraint. After a moment, he relaxed and folded his arms.
"Your turn to try, Your Majesty," Ronadin ventured.
"Not yet,"
Celebrant growled.
"I take it your golden minions cannot enter?" Ronadin asked.
"Only those in possession of themselves may cross the threshold,"
Celebrant said, enraged eyes never leaving the wizened stone. The door burst open, and Tregane stumbled into the room.
"I'm not too late!"
he exclaimed. Lunging at Seth, Tregane grabbed his hand with the silver glove. Seth yanked his hand away and did not turn to silver.
"Interesting," Ronadin said. "Not in here."
Tregane glanced at Celebrant, then at the rod on the floor near the pedestal. Tregane charged for the rod. Celebrant took a step to intercept him, then stopped. Tregane scooped up the rod and grabbed the wizened stone. He did not move after taking hold of the jewel, nor did the gemstone. Tregane's body began to tremble and spasm until he vanished in a burst of ash. The rod clattered to the floor again. Kendra stared in amazement and horror. How was anyone supposed to claim the stone if it turned whoever touched it to ashes? Having the rod seemed irrelevant. No need to drive away a demon if your body evaporated. Celebrant turned to Ronadin.
How do I claim it?
The Dragon King asked.
I'm not sure, Ronadin said. Kendra looked at Seth. He watched from off to the side, clearly bewildered, trying to make sense of what he was seeing. The banishment rod lay unattended on the floor. Should she try it? Wouldn't she just turn to ash as well? Did the person have to be worthy? Might she be worthy? Her intentions were good. What if she waited? Celebrant did not seem to be in a hurry to take the risk of grabbing the stone, but he didn't have to rush. More dragons would probably come. He had the luxury of time. Kendra knew her opportunity to do something might not last for long, but what could she do? She most needed to prevent Celebrant from obtaining the Wizenstone, or Ronadin. Given enough time, Celebrant would probably succeed. Kendra looked at the rod on the ground, and suddenly an idea occurred. She dashed forward.
Kendra, are you sure? Ronadin asked.
Celebrant hushed him. She was not sure, but she was sure enough. It was worth a try. Celebrant would not be kind to her as a prisoner. She was mildly surprised to be alive. Seth was currently defenseless. She might not get another chance to affect the outcome. Kendra picked up the banishment rod, pointed it at the Wizenstone, and shouted, "Be gone!" The rod thrummed in her grasp. In a blink, the Wizenstone vanished. Only the empty pedestal remained. Relief flooded through Kendra as she glanced over to find Ronadin smirking and Celebrant shouting. The Dragon King glowered at her, veins protruding in his neck. Humbuggle the Dwarf appeared between them.
"Interesting choice," he said. "I'm afraid we'll have to call this contest a draw."
"Where is the stone?"
Celebrant bellowed. Humbuggle waved a dismissive hand.
"Far away. Banished. None of your affair anymore. If you're angry, think about poor Tregain. He waited hundreds of years, only to get obliterated at the end."
"The Wizenstone is not meant to be owned," Ronadin said.
"I provided that hint in the poem," Humbuggle said. "Some people don't trust plain language."
"So you never own it," Ronadin went on. "You just set up contests for others to try to win it. Meanwhile, it is in your custody, and you use its powers to create your games."
"Enough out of you," Humbuggle said.
With a clap of his hands, the banishment rod disappeared from Kendra's grasp and went to him. "It must be possible to win the contest or else the magic wouldn't hold up," Ronadin said. "But you rig the game so the best a contestant can do is send the Wizenstone away, ending the contest and letting you start another."
"Nobody likes a heckler,"
Humbuggle said. "You're the demon guarding the Wizenstone," Ronadin said. "The only hope of winning the contest is replacing you." Humbuggle leveled the rod at Ronadin and called out,
"Return!"
Ronadin vanished.
"What a bore," Humbuggle said. "Much too chatty. Some might say the curse of Stormguard Castle has ended. Some might call Kendra a heroine. I just say the contest is over, ending in a draw. The gloves have lost all power, and those who became gold, silver, or platinum are freed. The added passages I created are undone."
Kendra felt enormous relief to hear that Tanu and the others who had been turned to precious metals would be all right. She would need to go get Nox from the quiet box.
"What about Jaleesa's arm?"
Celebrant asked.
"She chose to attack after knowing the rules," Humbuggle said. "Lost limbs are lost limbs. Personal injuries are personal injuries."
"Obregon?"
Celebrant asked.
He chose to claim the unclaimable, Humbuggle said. He and Tregane are as dead as they could be.
What about Seth? Kendra asked, hoping for good news.
There have to be some consequences, Humbuggle said. The boy made his choice without knowledge of the outcome. Access to the Wizenstone comes at a price.
Can't you undo it? Kendra asked. Can't I do something?
Rules are rules, Humbuggle said.
Rules? Kendra asked, sick with worry for her brother, hoping there might be some loophole. We were playing for the Wizenstone and we don't have it. Doesn't that violate the rules? Shouldn't you take away the punishments?
You chose to send the Wizenstone away, Humbuggle said. You terminated the contest. The king and queen are freed. Life at Stormguard Castle can be much as it was before. I'll send you home, then I'll go elsewhere too. I salute you, brave contestants. To have survived and ended this contest is an outcome only you have achieved.
What if I don't want to go just yet? Kendra asked.
Not really your choice, Humbuggle said.
He swung the rod and cried,
Return!
Chapter 33 Taken. Kendra stood in her bedroom at Blackwell Keep in her socks. Though it was dark, she could see. She had her abilities back. Somewhere beyond her room, unsettling sounds flavored the night. Forlorn howls, desperate shrieks, and ominous drums. The noises of Midsummer Eve were no longer screened out. Was it really still the same night? So much had happened. Was she truly safe, back with her grandparents, behind protective barriers? It was disorienting to go from a cursed castle surrounded by enemies to her very own bedroom at the keep. But if she was disoriented, Seth must be utterly confused. Kendra went out her door to visit his room and saw Mendigo racing down the hall holding Seth, who was squirming. They disappeared around a corner before she could really register what she was seeing.
Mendigo? Kendra called, running after the man-sized puppet. Come here!
Outside, the night remained tumultuous. Maybe the Limberjack couldn't hear her. Maybe Seth was scared and had asked Mendigo to take him someplace. But why had he been squirming? Kendra dashed around the corner, down some steps and out a door into a courtyard. Some clouds, faintly brightening on the horizon, hinted at the approaching dawn. The night remained as boisterous as ever. Mendigo raced across the courtyard, still clutching Seth. Rain began to fall, and lightning forked across the sky, the glare sharply illuminating her brother and the sprinting Limberjack. Thunder growled.
"Stop, Mendigo!" Kendra shouted to anyone who might hear. "Something is wrong!"
She raced after them, feeling sick with worry. The rain fell harder. She should have known something was wrong when Mendigo had refused to accompany her to Skyhold. What was Seth thinking right now? The Minotaur Brunwyn jumped down half a stairway to join the chase. A dwarf was running after Mendigo as well. The Limberjack exited the courtyard through a door to the storerooms. Kendra ran through the rain as fast as she could. Lightning flashed again, brighter than before, loud thunder following promptly. Where was Mendigo going? Would the puppet try to hurt Seth? She burst through the door in time to see Mendigo entering a storeroom down the hall. Seth bucked and slapped the puppet, trying to wrench himself free. They both passed out of view again. Kendra kept running. Was this really happening? After they had survived all the danger at Stormguard Castle? Brunwyn caught up to Kendra at the storeroom door. The dwarf was a few paces behind them. Mendigo had cast aside several crates and barrels.
Kendra no longer saw Seth. As she and the Minotaur approached, Mendigo jumped into an open barrel and crouched out of sight. By the time they looked inside the barrel, the Limberjack was gone.
"Seth!"
Kendra cried, looking around.
"Seth!"
Her eyes returned to the barrel. She remembered Nox telling her how the barrel had gone missing after he and Tess had come to Wormroost. The goblin guard had been murdered. Everyone had assumed the killer must have come through the barrel. What if the killer had been Mendigo? What if the puppet had then stashed the barrel in a storeroom and had waited? And now Seth was gone.
Seth!
Kendra screamed once again, more for herself this time. Wherever her brother was, she knew he couldn't hear her.
Chapter 34 Apprentice. Seth stood in a dim room lit by a single torch. The space smelled like ancient books and rotting ingredients. The strange puppet that had brought him here waited against a shadowy wall, upright, but otherwise inert.
"I was worried they would steal you away from me," Ronadan said. "I had to act fast."
"Seemed like your wooden friend stole me," Seth said. "Where are we? You're the guy from the castle."
"Mendigo rescued you," Ronadan corrected.
"You're quite powerful, Seth. Those people wiped your memory and wanted to recruit you to their side."
"Kendra told me she is my sister," Seth said.
"Maybe, in a sense. Once. Long ago," Ronadan said. "As a child, you sometimes fought on the same side as she did.
I was like that too, trying to please everyone a lifetime ago. Then you began to learn about your dark powers. You are my top apprentice. You are a shadow charmer, Seth."
"We're on the bad side?" Seth asked.
Ronadan laughed lightly.
"We're on our own side."
Seth stared at him, unsure what to believe. Ever since he had found himself standing outside the fancy door, Seth had gone from one tense, nonsensical situation to the next. People had argued, and some had gotten turned to powder. A magical dwarf had appeared. Seth had been teleported to a dark room and carried through the rain by a giant wooden puppet. Then getting stuffed in a barrel and lifted out had somehow brought him here.
"How does the barrel work?" Seth asked.
"That barrel connects to the barrel at Blackwell Keep," Ronadan said. "Technically, it is a separate manifestation of the same barrel. In effect, having separate barrels that are also the same can allow a person to move from one place to another. I have my own ways of traveling. Helps if you know the Under King."
"Why would you have a barrel that connects to where Kendra lives?" Seth asked.
"A friend owed me a favor," Ronadan said. "He is called the Sphinx. Sooner or later I will introduce you. The barrel was delivered to him by a pair of goblins who escaped their dungeon. He gave it to me. A friend of his, Vernaz, helped reconstruct Mendigo, the puppet who assisted in your rescue. A feature he added lets the puppet receive overriding commands from afar."
"What now?" Seth asked.
"We start rebuilding you," Ronadan said. "Do you remember your powers?"
"I don't think I have powers," Seth said.
"You understand many languages," Ronadan said. "You can communicate with the undead, and often you can persuade them. You are nearly invisible when moving in faint light, and some abilities are just beginning to surface."
"Like what?" Seth asked.
"Like extinguishing light," Ronadan said. "Quenching fire. That torch, for example. You see it with your eyes?"
"Of course."
"Feel it with your mind," Ronadan said. "I know you can. Feel the hot center where the fuel is combusting."
weird, Seth said. I can feel it.
You're a shadow charmer, Ronadin said. You're sensitive to light and heat. Some of the undead are not far from us. Seek their coldness as you sought the heat.
Yes, Seth said, noticing the whispery presences. Three of them. That way, he pointed.
Very good, Ronadin said. Can you sense how frigid they are? Seth shivered.
Yes.
Borrow that coldness. There are other ways to find coldness, but this is the surest, easiest way.
Borrow it how? Seth asked.
He could feel the cold presences with his mind, just as he could feel the core of the flaming torch. Bring the cold to the hot place on the torch, Ronadin said.
How do I do that?
Think of it going there. Realize that by feeling it, you can also influence it. Invite the cold of the undead to the hottest part of the torch. Seth tried. The torch sputtered. Not gently, Ronadin said. All at once. Force their coldness to the torch. Gritting his teeth, Seth pulled the cold to the torch. He felt the cold smother the heat, and the torch went out. Seth blinked in the darkness, surprised that the mental effort had worked. Very well done, Ronadin said, unseen but nearby.
I guess I do have powers, Seth said.
You're only beginning to scratch the surface, Ronadin said. Seth, my brother, we are going to make beautiful music together.
This concludes this presentation of Dragon Watch, Book 2, Wrath of the Dragon King, by Brandon Mole. Performed for you by Kirby Hayborn. This program was produced by Kenny Hodges. Executive producers, Chris Schobinger and Heidi Taylor. Copyright 2018 by Brandon Mole. Production copyright, Shadow Mountain. All rights reserved. This has been a Shadow Mountain production.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.